From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this Thursday edition of Washington Watch. Coming up in 4 days, the U.S. Senate will take one of the most defining votes in its 230-year history. 100 men and women from different backgrounds, different parties, will decide where America stands, with the innocent or with infanticide. I'll be joined by the author of the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, Senator Ben Sasse of Nebraska, in just a moment. And the humanitarian crisis in Venezuela is intensifying as Nicolas Maduro in a standoff with Juan Guaido over the presidency of Venezuela has refused to allow humanitarian aid to enter the country, saying there is no crisis, even as thousands are trying to flee the country. The U.S. will once again try to deliver aid this week, and Congressman Ted Yoho, a member of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, joins me with analysis. Also, how low can the media's credibility go? Within the last month, two major stories have been created by members of the media because the stories apparently fit the anti-Trump narrative. Both stories, first involving high school students from a Catholic school in Covington, Kentucky, and the other involving Empire actor Jussie Smollett, were both false. Rich Noyes, research director at the Media Research Center, is here with the answer. And I'll be taking your phone calls. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. Well, I wish it were not necessary, but since it is unfortunately necessary, I'm grateful that the Senate has scheduled a vote this coming Monday, February the 25th at 5 p.m. Eastern on the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. Now, this is so critical. I want you to call both of your senators today. And that switchboard number in Washington, 202-224-3121. I'll give that out again. But I want you to urge them to support this life-saving bill. Now, joining me now is the man who has introduced this bill, Republican Senator Ben Sasse of Nebraska, who serves on the Judiciary Committee, the Intelligence Committee, the Banking, Housing, and Urban Affairs Committee, and the Joint Economic Committee as well. I should also mention that as an undergrad, Senator Sasse was recruited to wrestle at Harvard and then earned a Ph.D. in American history at Yale. And at the age of 37, was recruited to take over Midland University, making him one of the youngest college presidents in the nation, where he served for 5 years prior to joining the Senate. Senator, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, thank you for the invitation and thanks for the stuff you're fighting for today.
Well, let's talk about your bill. You tried to get it onto the Senate floor a couple of weeks ago by unanimous consent. That was blocked by Patty Murray. Going to try it again. What do the prospects look like?
Well, first of all, let's just say what it is. I mean, this is some pretty basic stuff. There is nothing here that should be controversial or should require any courage from politicians, because what we're talking about is that a baby is a baby, and that should have nothing to do with your politics. It should be about, if you have a heart, you believe that a baby that's born alive has a right and has dignity and has worth. And so I've been fighting for 3 years to get a recorded floor vote for the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. And when it was blocked, when we tried to do it by unanimous consent, I'm happy that the majority leader, Mitch McConnell, agreed to schedule floor time to actually vote on it on Monday night. This should be the kind of thing that passes 100-0, but it didn't pass 100-0. So now it should be the sort of thing that passes overwhelmingly. And I got to be honest, there are a whole bunch of Democrats now who look like they're trying to claim that that this is somehow controversial to say that a baby that's been born alive should be protected. And so I'm not going to prognosticate about what the vote count should be or is going to be, but I know what it should be. It should be indisputably unanimous.
Now, let's be very clear so our listeners understand what we're talking about here. This is not a ban on third trimester abortions. This is about a baby who survives an attempted abortion and is born alive, cannot then be killed or left to die, but rather that they are given medical assistance.
You got it. I'm as pro-life as anybody could possibly be in the United States Senate, but this bill is actually not about abortion. This bill is about a baby that has survived an abortion and been born alive and is on that table cold and fighting for life and crying out. And it's about the practice that's known as backing away, where abortion providers then back away from the table and just leave the baby to die by exposure in the elements. Nothing should be controversial about we should be providing the same level of care to these babies that we would to any other baby at the same stage of gestation when they're born alive.
I mean, Senator, you've made very clear that this really is an issue of infanticide and whether or not as a nation we want to be pushed to that point where we stand by and allow infanticide to occur within the borders of our country.
Yeah. I mean, in human history, this gross, tragic, disgusting practice has actually been prevalent in human history. The ancient Aztecs did it.
Right.
The ancient
right.
Greeks did it. They would try to evaluate if they thought a baby was undesirable. They'd go leave them on the hillside or the mountainside and let them die of exposure. And this debate, it's kind of amazing that we're having this debate in America right now. But you see both New York and Virginia movements to sort of extend the ability of ability isn't even the right word, but the sort of tolerance of people to kill babies to beyond birth. And so in New York, what we saw the governor do, Governor Cuomo, when New York passed a law a month ago that repealed protections for infant babies that were born alive during a botched abortion, Cuomo then lit up the World Trade Center in pink to celebrate this pro-death movement. Think about what that means. Pink has historically been the symbolic color of women who survive breast cancer. This is about gritty, persevering women who are celebrating life, and now they're trying to take that color and pervert it and make it a celebration of death. And in Virginia, we've seen their disgraced governor, Ralph Northam, who obviously has all sorts of problems understanding human dignity in general, out there actively defending infanticide. It is a bizarre cultural moment we're at.
It is, because isn't this something that has distinguished America? We might call it American exceptionalism, as we have seen the advancement of Western civilization, an understanding that each and every human being has dignity and worth. I mean, isn't that what has caused us to stand apart?
Amen. I mean, that if you wanted to say what is the exceptional idea that America is founded on, we believe in limited government precisely because we believe in limitless human rights. And we don't believe in pragmatic or utilitarian calculations of whether or not a life has worth. We say when a baby is born, we believe in equality. We believe in universal human dignity. Those of us that come out of the Judeo-Christian tradition, we talk about image bearers. We talk about the dignity and worth of these children and about whether or not we're going to protect them. And there's a whole bunch of people in the United States Senate that throw around the language of the poorest and the most vulnerable among us on topic after topic after topic. Well, on Monday night, you're actually going to get to see the United States Senate have a chance to put individual senators put their money where their mouth is and see if they really want to stand with the little guy, because the little guy is that little guy or gal on that table fighting for life, and whether or not you're going to provide basic care that you would provide to any other baby at that stage of gestation.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. Senator Ben Sasse of Nebraska, my guest, discussing his bill, which will be on the Senate floor this coming Monday. It is the Senate Bill 311. It is the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. And, you know, Senator, we've not always gotten it right in America in terms of recognizing the dignity of the individual and the value of each and every human being. But we've usually been moving in a trajectory that moves us in the right direction. This is stepping backwards, and I think could have significant ramifications for us as a country when it comes to the culture, comes to the moral standing of America. And this, to me, is a defining moment for our nation.
I think you're right. This is an opportunity. This legislation on Monday night is a chance for 100 people who are elected to represent the American people to stand before the 320 million folks that are actually our bosses and say whether or not we're pro common sense, pro compassion, pro science, pro baby, which is it's a pretty simple thing to do. But right now, the U.S. is one of only four countries on earth that allow abortion up to the moment of birth. And the human rights abusers we stand with there are
Vietnam and China. That's really what's going on right now in the sort of moral calculus of the country. And in New York and Virginia, you see this movement trying to pay less and less attention to the dignity of babies at exactly the point that our young people in America are becoming more pro-life. What we see happening in this movement of compassion and science, frankly, is more in utero images of babies being available to us as technology advances, and younger people who tend to be more image culture saturated are seeing more pictures of what happens in utero, and younger people are becoming more pro-life. Strangely, the politics of the left in a number of these states is moving in exactly the opposite direction.
You know, Senator, that brings up a good point, because you're absolutely right. When you look at technology, it is moving us in the direction of life. The younger generation, more pro-life than their parents. Could this be kind of the last grasp of the abortion lobby to try to surge forward, knowing that their days are limited, when we see what's been happening in state legislatures across the country, and quite frankly, where we see the court moving in a direction of recognizing that each and every human being has dignity, and then, you know, maybe sending this back to the states and letting the states decide? I mean, is that part of this, you think?
I kind of have the same thought and wonder, which is you see more and more radical politics being advanced by certain interest groups. I mean, the Planned Parenthood abortion lobby, for instance. Planned Parenthood is by far the largest abortion provider in America, and they make tons and tons of money off every abortion that they're delivering. They're so out of touch with where the science is going and where American sensibilities are going that I do think there's some of it that's just political power play. But I do also think there's a philosophical side to the movement, to part of the pro-death movement in this. And if you look at people like Peter Singer, the philosopher at Princeton, mm-hmm. he is very intentionally defining life as based on its utilitarian value. And so people that aren't going to have, if you might have some birth defects and other disabilities and challenges, he says, well, why should society think that you have any worth? You're not going to be able to contribute much to society. Those lives should be able to be snuffed out. And I think some of the folks that defend this repugnant practice of so-called backing away from the table when these babies are born alive, some of them are just very philosophically motivated by a utilitarian calculus that rejects the dignity and worth of those babies.
Senator, before I know you got to go, before we let you go, what do you need our listeners to do between now and Monday?
Well, thank you for drawing attention to this, frankly. And I know you gave out your number for folks to call in and be transferred, get the information about how they can lobby their senators. I think all 100 senators need to know that they're going to be on record. They have an opportunity to unanimously say the most basic thing imaginable, which is that it's wrong to kill a newborn baby. And I think there are a number of senators who know in their gut what the right thing to do is, but they're scared, and they need to know that their voters are on the side of life.
And we'll also be praying. A very significant moment for our nation. Senator Ben Sasse, thank you so much for joining us today and for your leadership on this critical issue.
Thanks for the time.
All right, Senator Ben Sasse of Nebraska. And folks, I want you to pray. Pray for this. This is, I believe, a defining moment for the nation. It's one of those defining moments. The phone number, 202-224-3121. 202-224-3121. They can connect you with your two United States senators. All right, don't go away. Coming back, Ted Yoho of Florida, member of the House Intelligence Foreign Affairs Committee, joins us to talk about what's happening in Venezuela. That's next. Don't go away.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy that inspire us from childhood, such as unicorns and the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being, from the Loch Ness Monster to big tax refunds. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. Since 1973, these abortion myths have grown a substantial foothold in developing a climate of fear, misinformation, and a culture of death in the United States. In FRC's new analysis, learn whether most Americans support abortion on demand and if a fetus does in fact feel pain in the womb. Join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
The world on our horizon isn't like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Now, let me remind you, this coming weekend on Sunday, I will be up in Bossier City, Louisiana, preaching there, Bossier First Baptist, Sunday morning. But then Sunday evening from 4 until 9, Congressman Mike Johnson and I will be doing Answers for Our Time seminar. It's free. All you need to do is register. Go to TonyPerkins.com. There's still some room. I got a report today. It's pretty much filled up, but we've got some room left. So if you're within driving distance, go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over and register for that event. All right. Venezuelan troops remain stationed along the country's borders to prevent humanitarian supplies from coming into the country. Now, this is going to come probably to a showdown this weekend as more humanitarian relief efforts are positioned on the border. And the opposition leader, the president of the assembly, who is being recognized as the president of the country, Juan Guaido, is asking the military to let that in. Now, Nicolas Maduro, the president who was there, a lot of corruption in his reelection. He's not been recognized. People are starving. They're fleeing the country by the thousands. It is a major humanitarian crisis, and the United States is trying to respond. We'll see what happens this weekend. Joining us with the latest on this, Congressman Ted Yoho of Florida. He is also a member of the Foreign Affairs Committee and the House Freedom Caucus. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, thanks for having me on, and I appreciate the work you do, and it was good to see you. I think it was last week up in D.C., wasn't it?
It was. Thank you so much. It was good to see you as well. This is a crisis. I mean, there's so many crises in the world that it's hard to focus on all of them. But this is becoming a major humanitarian crisis when you look at the number of refugees trying to flee Venezuela and Nicolas Maduro refusing to allow relief supplies to come into the country.
It really is. And what you just said there drives the point home. Maduro wants to say that this is America doing this. When you have 3 million people in your country wanting to get out of it, it's not because America is doing anything. It's because Maduro has done such a terrible job of ruining that country with the resources they have. And this is clearly a failed government, and his last election was nothing short of a sham. And so when you have, you've also got 50 countries, over 50 countries, recognizing Juan Guaido as the interim president, as their constitution says he has the right to do.
Now, when you look at Venezuela, and this is, I mean, not to to get off onto this, but the president has been making this point about socialism and socialistic policies. I mean, Venezuela was one of the wealthiest countries. I mean, the oil that they have there, the reserves there equal to what Saudi Arabia has. And but yet they've squandered it, and their people are literally dying for in hunger.
They really are. And, you know, living in Florida where I live, I've got a lot of clients and friends that are from Venezuela. And so we get firsthand reports of what really is happening on the ground. And it's an ugly mess. It really is. And it is, as you said, it's a failed socialist country that the people of Venezuela are suffering. You've got parents dropping off children in hospitals because of starvation, and a lot of those kids are dying. And, you know, the other interesting thing about this is Maduro, or his security force, has an elite group of Cuban soldiers from the Castro regime protecting him because he doesn't have full faith of his generals. And so that's who his military security force is. In addition, there's an estimate of 40,000 Cuban troops that have been in Venezuela as kind of his brown shirts, I guess, lack of a better word.
That leads me to the two other questions I want to ask you. One is Cuba has basically drawn the line in the sand, which it's, I don't know, almost comical, but they're challenging the United States if we get involved, that it may trigger a response from them. But you also have Russia involved in this as well. Are there concerns that this could trigger something bigger?
It is. And, you know, you brought up a great point. In fact, I brought this up in one of our foreign affairs meetings we had. We had the interim ambassador, I forget his name, from Venezuela. And I said, this is more than just what's going on in Venezuela, because who do you have supporting Maduro? You've got Cuba, you've got Russia, right. China, Iran, and Turkey. So you've got all anti-Western democracies supporting a failed regime in Venezuela. And so if this is being played out, and I see this as the Rubicon, Venezuela, because if Venezuela fails, Cuba automatically fails because they're the ones that have been propping them up. And then China and Russia, can they afford to have another socialist, communist, dictator-type country fall by the wayside that they've been propping up as a better way? And I think this is, like you said, this is much more than just about Venezuela, because as Venezuela goes, so does Cuba.
I think that's right. And then my second question I wanted to ask you is, how key is the military, the Venezuelan military, to the outcome of this? As you said, he can't trust them. He's got Cuban forces protecting him. If the military goes over to Guaido, is that it for Maduro?
I think it is. And that's something we hope that happens quickly with very little bloodshed. The right thing to do would be for Maduro to step down. But when you have a despot like him, they never want to step down because they're never at fault, you know. And so I think what you'll see is the military will side with Guaido. You know, there's already been talk of giving them amnesty, come on over. And when you look at the elite military, along with Maduro, they have siphoned over $11 billion from the resources of petroleum that they've enriched themselves at the expense of the Venezuelan people.
Well, it is, in fact, a crisis. Congressman Yoho, thanks
crisis,
so much.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for being with
thank
us.
Thank you, Tony. Keep up the great job.
All right. Thank you so much, Ted. Ted Yoho from Florida. Pray for them. Pray for the people of Venezuela. Pray for the outcome here. I think it's going to come to a head this weekend. Okay, Rich Noyes, Research Director at Media Research Center, joins us next to talk about the media. Can their credibility go any lower? We'll talk about it.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy that inspire us from childhood, such as unicorns and the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being, from the Loch Ness Monster to big tax refunds. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. Since 1973, these abortion myths have grown a substantial foothold in developing a climate of fear, misinformation, and a culture of death in the United States. In FRC's new analysis, learn whether most Americans support abortion on demand, and if a fetus does in fact feel pain in the womb. Join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right. In the last month, there's been two big media stories. In both cases, the media rushed to judgment and got the story wrong. Now, of course, the stories were, they fit into the anti-Trump narrative. I mean, the first story, the media outlets like the Washington Post jumped on the bandwagon and drew inaccurate conclusions about the alleged confrontation between the Native American veteran named Nathan Phillips and several Covington, Kentucky Catholic high school students at the end of the March for Life last month. Well, it turns out the students were not guilty of anything. In fact, they were the ones that were being harassed. And so now they are suing the Washington Post, one of the students, for $250 million, and I hope they get every penny of it, quite frankly. And in the second, a more recent story, Empire actor Jussie Smollett claimed that he was the victim of a hate crime in which the two masked men cited his ethnicity and his homosexual lifestyle while they attacked him, leaving a noose draped around his neck. Turns out that Smollett might have staged the whole thing himself and is being, in fact, was just released moments ago from jail. Now, here's what the Chicago Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson said earlier today.
I come to you not only as the superintendent of the Chicago Police Department, but also as a black man who spent his entire life living in the city of Chicago. I know the racial divide that exists here. I know how hard it's been for our city and our nation to come together. And I also know the disparities, and I know the history. So I'm offended by what's happened, and I'm also angry. I love the city of Chicago and the Chicago Police Department, warts and all. But this publicity stunt was a scar that Chicago didn't earn and certainly didn't deserve. To make things worse, the accusations within this phony attack received national attention for weeks. Celebrities, news commentators, and even presidential candidates weighed in on something that was choreographed by an actor. I only hope that the truth about what happened receives the same amount of attention that the hoax did.
Well, will it? Joining me now to talk about it is Rich Noyes, Research Director at the Media Research Center. Rich, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
So do you think the media will now go back and pay as much attention to this as they did before?
Well, it's going to be hard. I mean, the Jussie Smollett case received 157 minutes of coverage on just the big three ABC, CBS, NBC morning and evening newscasts in about 2 weeks. They might stick with it. This has become a sensational story, and it really is an excessive story, but it, you know, it didn't need to be this hyped up in the first place, and it didn't need to be this one-sided in the beginning. You know, this was something that people could see through early on, and I think, you know, if you look at both this case and the one of the Covington students, you know, there's this common thread of painting Trump supporters as automatic bad guys. You know, the kid in the MAGA hat has to be the bad guy in that situation. You know, Jussie Smollett invented the detail that, according to police, of his attackers wearing MAGA hats. And I think this is where the media's bias really gets them into trouble. They see something like that, it matches their prejudiced view of the world, and they don't look at it with the same scrutiny they would if the roles were reversed. And I think this is why, you know, they have egg on their face, you know, in this case, in the Covington case, and potentially in others.
Now, Rich, but wasn't there a time in journalism where you put your—I mean, we all have biases. I mean, we all have a worldview that we bring to the table, no matter, you know, who we are, what we do. But wasn't there a time when professional journalists put those personal views aside and asked questions before they ran with stories?
They did, or if they didn't, their editors did it for them and told them they had to do it. I mean, I think what's lacking is you know, you have newsrooms now that really are so one-sided. You know, there's nobody in these newsrooms who you know, reflects the other side. You know, if you had, you know, even 25 or 30% of the people at one of these big newspapers who had voted for Trump or who, you know, had Trump supporters in their family, you know, they might be a lot more sensitive to these kinds of portrayals and say, hey, wait a second, you know, what are you doing? You know, this doesn't seem right. You're painting with a broad brush, or let's take a look at it from the other perspective. But if it's all these liberals with the same groupthink and then talking to audiences that have sort of a one-sided point of view, living inside their own bubble, you know, I don't think you're going to get press that is really trying to sort of look for the truth as much as it's trying to keep repeating the story that their audiences want to hear and getting the clicks or the views or whatever.
Now, Rich, could it also be, and we're just about up against a break. Can you stick around through the break so we can finish this conversation? Because I want to ask you about, you know, is part of the factor, I mean, not only the bias there, but the rush to try to beat the, you know, the bloggers and the, you know, the YouTube videos, that the media has been brought down to the level of the credibility of bloggers in some cases. And, you know, those with a phone out doing YouTube videos. We're going to talk about that with Rich Noyes, who is with the Media Research Center. He's the research director. And we're going to come back, finish this conversation, and then we're going to be taking your phone calls on this Thursday afternoon. So don't go away. More Washington Watch still to come.
The world on our horizon isn't like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy, from unicorns to the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. In FRC's analysis, 10 Myths on Abortion, join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to our other free resources, go to frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. All right, Rich Noyes, Research Director at the Media Research Center, joins me talking about the media and two big stories in the last month where the media rushing to judgment got it wrong. Now, we were just discussing the bias that's within the media, the anti-Trump bias. Both of these stories, the story with Jussie Smollett and also with the Covington, Kentucky Catholic high school students, both of those kind of fit an anti-Trump narrative. There is a, I think, a lack of professionalism in the media today. And I say that as one who actually used to be a TV reporter years ago. I mean, you checked your facts. Rich, is it also this where, you know, almost everybody can be a reporter today? Is there this idea that they have to, you know, be first out with this and so they don't check their facts as well?
Well, I don't know if they're trying to beat social media, but I think they're heavily being led by social media. I mean, remember the Covington story? This was somebody who eventually had their account suspended by Twitter because of their dishonesty, put out a doctored video of that confrontation and floated it into news circles and liberal circles, and they all got excited about it and thought what they were seeing was as it happened. It took until you had much longer video before that was exposed. So they let themselves be led by social media. You know, there was a social media emotional outpouring for Jussie Smollett before people really stopped and gave that sort of a critical examination. You know, so reporters, I think, they live on social media. They're influenced by the trends on social media. They may be, you know, not following a good sampling of America, but sort of more people who are sort of in their circles. But those trends are not making them more professional or more careful. It's, in fact, bringing the profession down to the level of social media.
Yeah, that's a very good point, that they are being led as they see this stuff out here. And quite frankly, I think journalists have gotten lazy. where, you know, they don't do as much of the legwork checking out these stories as they used to. They're spoon-fed in many ways, and I guess social media is now the one that's feeding them a lot of these stories.
I think that's right, and I think, you know, if you look at the lawsuit against the Washington Post and the case of the Covington kids, you know, the lawyers there put together a very careful report on what was really happening versus what was in the newspapers, and it, you know, it really does paint a picture of journalists who just wanted to print what they heard without checking it out, versus the lawyers checked it out. They did the journalist's job for them. And, you know, you have a much more careful, honest view of what happened. That's not a good good view for the profession of journalism.
Rich, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate the great work that Media Research Center does. And I just want to thank you for joining us today to take a look at these two stories.
Thank you, Tony.
All right. To find out more about the Media Research Center, go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. They're a good organization. They do a lot of good work. 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. That's 866-FRC-RADIO. If you'd like to get in on the conversation this afternoon, you know, the media, and again, let me go back and say that, full disclosure, I was a television reporter for a brief period of time, for about a year, maybe 2 years. Before I entered into the political arena. In fact, that's what got me involved in politics. I was covering the legislature in Louisiana, and I saw what was happening. I said, wow, this is crazy. I could do this. And I sensed the Lord calling me in that direction. So I ran against a 20-year political veteran, and lo and behold, I won. But so I have a lot of respect for the media. I did. But I've seen a transition in the last 10 years, the last decade of the media, where their liberal bias is no longer veiled, but rather it's overt, and they've become really the opposition party to conservatives and certainly to this president. They, their intent is to take down the president and stop him from being successful. I mean, you can see it. I mean, these two stories are examples. And anyone associated with this president is automatically tagged as a bad guy. That's where the media is at. All right, 866-372-7234. Let's go to Mark in Odessa, Texas. Mark, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hello, Tony. Thank you for taking my call. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you just fine. Go right ahead.
Okay, great. Well, I've got a comment, and then I've got a couple of questions that I really would like to get you to answer. The fake news deal, the lawsuit against the Washington Post and all that, I agree with you 100%. I hope they get every penny of that. But with the liberal news media just jumping on these stories, not caring whether they're true or not, and just using this as fuel to promote their narrative, is that not against the law? I mean, we can sue them for $250 million. That's great. I hope those people get the money. But if you look at who owns the Washington Post, that's like me spending 10 bucks more for lunch today than what I should have. You know, to me, what should happen is their license to broadcast should be jeopardized by some sort of enforcement. Are there laws? If there are not laws that lead that direction, you know, what do I need to do? What do we need to do to try to get, you know, some enforcement on these people that are doing this?
That's, you know, if you really want to get them worked up, you talk about the First Amendment, the freedom of the press. Now, they're not so concerned about freedom of religion, but they feel that the one portion of the First Amendment that deals with the freedom is, you know, more precious than the rest. I think they all need to be protected. And so there's that line. I think this is a part of the remedy, Mark, when you look at, this is Nick Sandman, who was the high school student in Covington, Kentucky. He's the one, his attorneys are filing the suit for two, or have filed the suit for $250 million against the Washington Post. That's a part of our system that is the checks and balances. And, you know, obviously they probably won't get all of that. Who knows what will happen? They'll probably settle. Who knows? But they certainly are put on record. Now, the reason they can do that is because, you know, Nick is just an average high school kid and he's demonized and he's attacked and all of these things happened. But the same thing's not true when they go after public officials. And so they can attack the president. They can say anything they want false about the president because he doesn't have the same expectation of privacy. And because he's a public figure, the media can almost say anything they want. Now, television is a little bit different because you do get a license for a public airwave, and that makes it a little bit different. But usually that's only when it comes to issues of decency. But Mark, let me give you, first off, I want to thank you for the call and for listening. But here's what I think we need to do is not rely on the mainstream media. I think we hold them accountable with alternative sources of news. And that's, and there's a lot of different ones. Now they're segmented. They're not as broad as, you know, say the Washington Post and stuff, but you can, you know, CNSnews.com is a good source. Breitbart is a good source. And you've got people that, like FRC, we focus on a certain set of issues. We can be a source. We can't be your whole source for news, but we can be a source. So you got to kind of have an eclectic approach to gathering news from trusted sources and quit buying the papers. I quit buying the paper in my local community back in Baton Rouge, the Advocate. I quit buying it probably two decades ago because they were so liberal, and I'm not going to give them my money, and I'll find my news elsewhere. So I think that's part of it, Mark, is working, using our dollars to speak as well. Mark, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate you listening. Let's go to Randall in Alabama. Randall, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, I got your station while I was scanning the channels, listening for some good news.
Well, good.
Any good news. It's hard to find, but I appreciate your station and what you're talking about. I happen to be listening to, I stay on the road a lot, listening to the radio coming home the other day, and something I'd missed, I need to re-educated in civics because it sure has changed a lot. I don't think they teach civics anymore.
They know.
Based on the current, well, anyway, to the point. 55 years ago, the Supreme Court changed the rules on being able to sue the press. And I heard that from Mark Levin coming home mm-hmm. yesterday. And if they had not changed that, we would have a whole totally different media today because they'd all be out of business, the ones that publish false stories.
Right.
And yeah. I believe in freedom of the press, but I don't believe that they should make things up and fabricate them like Dan Rather did. And I believe it was Dan Rather, right? Bob Bush and
right.
Some of the things he said about the National Guard. I'm getting old, so my memory's not great anymore.
No, you got it. You're on point. That's
but
what
anyway,
it was.
So it's a libel law that was changed.
Right. And it was changed to make it more difficult for individuals, particularly individuals in the public space. So someone like myself, the media can say things about me, but because I'm a public figure, I have less grounds to go after them on. That's what makes this case with Nick Sandman a very real threat to the Washington Post is that he was he is not a public figure. He did not hold public office. He is a high school student who was viciously slandered in the media. And so this is one of those that even though they've changed the law, making it harder, this is one of those that they were not able to protect themselves from. And that's why I think this is a significant case. And quite frankly, I hope it's successful and I hope it brings greater attention to the point that you're talking about, Randall, that they do this to people all the time with basically with immunity. They're able to do it. No pushback, no consequences, and they destroy lives, and they're able to turn the country in the direction that they want it to go.
I wish it could be reversed. It's something that's needed to be reversed because you don't know who to believe anymore.
Yeah.
But thank you for being there, and I've got your phone number now, and I'll try to – I probed you into my vehicle, so I'll try to pick you up again.
Good. I hope you keep listening. Call us again. Randall from Alabama. All right. Let's try to work in another call or two here. Let's go to Joe in Delaware, Ohio. Joe, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Ms. Perkins. Thanks for what you do. Thanks for what the Media Research Center does. I think Hannity hit the nail on the head. Journalism's been dead since 2007. Outside of a handful of reporters, Sarah Carter, Solomon, and a few others, none of the journalists do anything anymore since 2007. A little bit light humor. I think it was Rush said that when this truth started to come out about the Smollett story, he said, you should have known it was a hoax because they don't sell mega hats in Chicago. And I think there's only 7 Trump voters in Chicago, and they were all asleep at 2 a.m. with the 30 below wind chill. So a little bit of light humor there. And then I've got a serious question for you. What is your take or your impression on Attorney General Barr? I've heard he's a Bush establishment. I heard he's weak on the Second Amendment. And the last thing Trump needs is another rhino establishment in the office with him. So I'll hang up and listen to your reply.
All right, Joe, thanks for the call. I actually think there was more truth to that than humor. I mean, I think there's a lot of truth to the Trump voters in Chicago. As far as William Barr, I don't know him. I have not met him. I think what you're seeing is a trend in the Trump administration now in this kind of second wave of nominees for different posts is they're actually pulling people that have been in before and have been confirmed before and advancing them. And I think the reason for that is political. One is to they have a better chance of getting confirmed. But even so, William Barr barely got through. It just shows how polarized Washington has become, where the Democrats almost in lockstep oppose anything the president does. Now, where does he stand on the issues? I'm fairly comfortable, but we will see. And I think the president is not going to pick somebody, especially, after he fell out with Jeff Sessions. I don't think he's going to put somebody in that post that he can't rely on. I think it's a very important post. So I have pretty good confidence the president made a right pick there. All right. Well, look, we're just about out of time. Sorry, we're not going to get to the rest of the calls tonight, but I do want to encourage you to call the United States Senate and weigh in on Senate Bill 311. That's the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act coming up Monday for a vote. The switchboard, 202-224-3121. Or go over to TonyPerkins.com, follow the links over, and you can contact him that way. Also, if you're in Shreveport this weekend, love to see you at Bossier First Baptist on Sunday. All right, until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul. He says in Ephesians 6, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, just keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.